RG.
This is Pacifica Radio, KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara.
February 10th, President Donald Trump renews threats against Iran in a push for a new nuclear deal.
We took out their nuclear power last time, and we'll have to see if we take out more this time.
This comes a day after the U.S. warns vessels to avoid waters around the country. Calls are growing for Britain's former prince, Andrew Mountbatten, to testify before lawmakers in the U.S. about his ties to the late pedophile Jeffrey Epstein.
Former Prince Andrew, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, to be specific, he needs to show up. He needs to show up, and he needs to answer questions in front of our Congress.
Democrats introduce a new law to end the statute of limitations for sex trafficking. Federal officials defend their immigration agents at a congressional hearing in the wake of three fatal shootings of U.S. citizens. And top brass at the Department of Homeland Security call for military-style reinforcements for future immigration operations at home. From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, this is the Pacifica Evening News. I'm Christina Onnestad. Iranian security officials Ali Larijani is in Oman, the country currently mediating talks between Tehran and Washington over Iran's nuclear program. Larijani likely discussed recent indirect talks held in the Omani capital. The talks have been described as important, though details remain unclear. Iranian media say Larijani would deliver an important message. He was later to travel to Qatar, which hosts a major U.S. military installation that Iran attacked in June after the U.S. bombed Iranian nuclear sites during the 12-day Iran-Israel war. This as the U.S. has increased its military presence in the Middle East, including sending the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln to pressure Iran into an agreement. President Donald Trump has also threatened to attack the country. And on Monday, reports say the administration issued new guidance to commercial vessels to stay away from Iranian waters and the Strait of Hormuz, a key route for Middle East cargo. Speaking to the Israeli outlet Channel 12, published today, Trump said, U.S. President Donald Trump said either we reach a deal or we'll have to do something very tough. Speaking on Fox News, he doubled down threats while talking up a new nuclear deal.
As you know, we have a massive flotilla right now going over to Iran, we'll see what happens. I think they want to make a deal. I think they'd be foolish if they didn't. We took out their nuclear power last time, and we'll have to see if we take out more this time.
Trump called the nuclear deal that was reached during the Barack Obama administration one of the dumbest deals I've ever seen. It allowed for low-level uranium enrichment in Iran. Trump withdrew from the deal during his last presidency, leading to Iran's ramped-up efforts on uranium enrichment to near weapons grade. Iran and the U.S. held new nuclear talks last week in Oman. Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, speaking Sunday to diplomats at a summit in Tehran, signaled Iran would stick to its position that it must be able to enrich uranium, a major point of contention with Trump. The war disrupted earlier rounds of nuclear talks between Washington and Tehran. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, meanwhile, has departed to Washington, D.C., where he'll meet with Trump for the seventh time on U.S. soil.
On this trip, we will discuss a number of issues. Gaza, the region, but of course, first and foremost, the negotiations with Iran. I will present to the president our ideas about the principles in the negotiations, the important principles, and in my opinion, they are important not only for Israel, but for everyone in the world who wants peace and security in the Middle East.
Iran security official Ali Larijani accused Israel of trying to play a destructive role in the talks, writing on social media, quote, "Americans must think wisely and not allow him, through posturing, to imply before his flight that I want to go and teach Americans the framework of the nuclear negotiations." United Nations ambassadors from Arab countries have condemned the new Israeli measures to further annex the West Bank. Led by Riyad Mansour, Palestine's ambassador, dozens of Arab and Islamic countries, including Syria and Turkey, say they've asked the United Nations Security Council to take up the issue of the West Bank in an emergency meeting. Ibrahim Alabi is a permanent representative to the United Nations for the country of Syria.
The group affirms that these illegal measures in the occupied West Bank are null and void, and they constitute a clear violation of the United Nations Security Council resolutions, in particular Resolution 2334, which condemns all Israeli measures aimed at altering the demographic composition, character, and status of the occupied Palestinian territory since 1967.
He spoke on behalf of the Arab League. The measures approved by Netanyahu's security cabinet Sunday expand Israel's enforcement authority over land use and planning in areas run by the Palestinian Authority and make it easier for Jewish settlers to force Palestinians to give up land so settlers can then lay claim to it. They also revive a government committee empowered to make what officials described as proactive land purchases in the territory, a step to reserve land for future settlement expansion. Israel's increasingly legalized settler outposts built on land Palestinians say documents show they have long owned, evicted Palestinian communities from areas declared state land and fired zones or nature reserves. More than 700,000 Israelis live in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, territories captured by Israel in 1967 and sought by the Palestinians for an independent state along with the Gaza Strip. Riyad Mansour is Palestine's ambassador to the United Nations.
We condemn that position, and we also mobilizing here at the United Nations all components of the UN, beginning with the Security Council, for the immediate reversal of this illegal position of the Israeli government.
Palestinians are not permitted to sell land privately to Israelis, but settlers can buy homes on land controlled by Israel's government. The international community considers Israeli settlements illegal under international law. In Gaza, two Palestinian men riding their bicycles were killed in an Israeli drone strike today, hospital officials say, as deadly violence continues despite an October ceasefire. Gaza health officials say 586 Palestinians have been killed since the truce took effect, bringing the war's overall death toll from Israeli strikes to more than 72,000. Mourners in southern Lebanon have buried a father and his young son killed in an Israeli drone strike targeting a Hezbollah member. Hassan Jaber, a police officer, and his three-year-old son, Ali, were on foot when the strike hit a passing car Monday. The car's driver was also killed. The Israeli military said there was artillery official that it was targeting the official with Hezbollah. An immigration court has blocked the deportation of a Turkish Tufts University student who was detained by immigration officials near her Massachusetts home last year. Rumeysa Ozturk's attorney and court documents say the immigration court found last month on January 29th the Department of Homeland Security hasn't proved she should be removed from the U.S., and the court terminated her removal proceedings. The attorneys include the information in a notice filed with the U.S. Second Court of Appeals, which has been reviewing her case. Her attorneys say the department has the option to appeal the immigration court's decision. Calls are mounting for Britain's former Prince Andrew Mountbatten to testify before Congress about his relations with the late pedophile Jeffrey Epstein in the wake of a trove of documents, some 3 million released by the Justice Department about its investigation into Epstein. Sky Roberts is the brother of the late Virginia Giuffre, an alleged victim of the former prince.
I think he should show up in front of our Congress and answer questions. I think that he has a lot of questions he needs to answer, and he has been exploited through these files to have inconsistencies in his own messaging. So former Prince Andrew, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, to be specific, he needs to show up. He needs to show up, and he needs to answer questions in front of our Congress.
Roberts spoke alongside Democrats, including Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who announced a new law to end the statute of limitations for sex traffickers, named after Giuffre, Virginia's law.
Legislation to end statute of limitation barriers that have kept survivors of sexual violence from justice far too long, and to create new legal avenues to pursue justice. Because justice should not expire. It makes clear that the law will empower survivors to pursue justice, and it recognizes something survivors have always known. Time does not erase harm.
The bill aims to remove the 10-year limit for adult survivors of sex trafficking and targets perpetrators as well as enablers. It would also apply to crimes that occur outside U.S. soil if courts have jurisdiction. Much of the late pedophile Jeffrey Epstein's alleged abuse took place on his island in the Caribbean, as well as a sprawling ranch in New Mexico. Representative Teresa Lager Fernandez of New Mexico is a supporter of the legislation.
It includes a look-back window, so survivors who were previously barred, who were told, no, you do not have access to the courtroom, so they have time to now go back and seek justice. And it clarifies that traffickers cannot escape accountability by committing abuses in another jurisdiction. You don't get to escape prosecution by simply putting predators and victims on a plane to a private island or a mansion in Florida or a ranch in New Mexico.
Giuffre's former lawyer, Sigrid McCauley, says the bill would acknowledge the struggle survivors like her clients have experienced.
Many survivors don't come to terms with their abuse until many, many years later. And they deserve the right to be able to bring an action when they're ready. That's what this law does. It is heartbreaking to be here announcing this without her. But I will tell you that her voice is being heard loud and clear.
Sigrid McCauley, Virginia Giuffre's one-time lawyer. According to a newly released document, the police chief in Palm Beach, Florida, told the FBI he'd gotten a call from Trump in 2006 about Epstein, and that Trump reportedly said, "Thank goodness you're stopping him." Even though she couldn't confirm the call, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said its reported contents confirmed Trump's repeated claims he ended his relationship with Epstein decades ago and that he himself had done nothing wrong.
President Trump has always said is that he kicked Jeffrey Epstein out of his Mar-a-Lago club because Jeffrey Epstein was a creep, and that remains true. And this call, if it did happen, corroborates exactly what President Trump has said from the beginning.
Though documents in the Epstein file show Trump met with Epstein as late as 2015, in the months before he announced his 2016 presidential bid. Levitt didn't rule out whether the president would grant Epstein's former girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, clemency in exchange for her testimony, Maxwell serving a 20-year prison sentence for sex trafficking and other crimes related to helping Epstein procure underage girls to sexually abuse. Levitt did say previous comments indicate Trump would not. Maxwell's lawyer has said she would be willing to cooperate with a House probe if the president grants her clemency, in exchange for saying President Donald Trump and former President Bill Clinton did no wrong. Levitt also said Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick has full support of President Trump. Lutnick's the highest-profile U.S. official to face calls for his resignation from lawmakers in both parties amid revelations of his ties to Epstein. Levitt was questioned after Lutnick testified to Congress today that he met with Epstein twice after Epstein's 2008 conviction for soliciting prostitution from a child. It's an about-face from Lutnick's prior claim he cut ties with Epstein after 2005. The admission came during his appearance before the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee hearing today. Democrats on the panel drilled down on Lutnick's relationship with Epstein. Maryland Senator Democrat Chris Van Hollen asked Lutnick to account for his post-conviction meetings with Epstein.
You made a very big point of saying that you sensed that this was a bad person in 2005. And then, of course, in 2008, he was convicted of soliciting prostitution of a minor. And yet you went and had this trip and other interactions. Did you have a dinner in Epstein's New York City home in 2011?
No.
Lutnick told senators he and his family had lunch with Epstein on his private island in 2012 and that he had private business meetings with Epstein at his home in 2011. Congressional Democrats aren't satisfied with the explanations for his meetings with Epstein after Epstein's conviction for sex trafficking offenses. California Democratic Congressman Ted Lieu told reporters today Lutnick should resign.
Epstein files new release shows that not only did Howard Lutnick lie to American people, he went into business with Jeffrey Epstein. He visited Epstein Island. And Howard Lutnick did this knowing how evil Epstein was.
Newly released Epstein files contradict Lutnick's claim on a podcast last year. He decided to never be in the room with Epstein after a 2005 tour of Epstein's home that reportedly disturbed Lutnick and his wife. The Commerce Secretary is the highest-ranking member of President Trump's cabinet to face bipartisan calls to resign over his connection to Epstein. In the United Kingdom, the Epstein files have led to high-level government resignations, but so far, U.S. officials have evaded any similar consequences. You are listening to the Pacifica Evening News here on KPFA 94.1 FM, KPFB 89.3 FM. I'm Christina Onnestad. An FBI search of the elections office in Fulton County, Georgia, is part of an investigation into possible deficiencies or defects in the 2020 presidential vote count, when President Donald Trump lost the state to Democrat Joe Biden. That's according to an affidavit unsealed today that's based on conspiracy theories and bogus claims by Trump and his allies the 2020 election was fraudulently stolen from him. The FBI relied on these years-old claims of fraud, many of them thoroughly investigated and debunked, to obtain the search warrants used to seize ballots in Fulton County's election offices. Audits, state officials, courts and Trump's own former attorney general have all rejected the idea there was widespread fraud in the 2020 election that could have altered its outcome. Republican lawmakers are pushing legislation to change election laws, require proof of citizenship and voter ID, and revamp mail-in voting. Democrats are pushing back, calling such moves a brazen attempt to take over elections or even take over the country. Lawmakers faced off in a hearing of the Committee on House Administration today. Christopher Martinez reports.
The title of the hearing was Make Elections Great Again, How to Restore Trust and Integrity in Federal Elections. And to Republican lawmakers, that trust, integrity, and making elections great has a very specific meaning. Republican Brian Stile of Wisconsin is chair of the Committee on House Administration and the author of a bill he calls the Make Elections Great Again Act.
Here's the top line. Elections should end on Election Day. You should need a photo identification to cast a ballot. You must be a citizen of the United States of America to vote in a federal election. We need audible paper ballots, and we shouldn't be sending ballots to people that don't request them. These reforms alone will improve voter confidence, strengthen election integrity, and continue to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat.
He preemptively blasted Democratic criticism of his measure as outlandish and false, but that criticism was quick to come.
I asked the American people this. Do you want Donald Trump running your elections? Do you want Pam Bondi or Kristi Noem running your elections?
Joe Morelle is a Democrat from New York. He blasted the Make Elections Great Again Act, as well as a similar measure in the Senate called the SAVE Act.
But really, all these bills have the same outcome. They are the Trump elections takeover bills. We know this because the president has said so himself. He said, we want to take over. We should take over the voting in at least 15 places.
He says Trump and congressional Republicans are terrified of losing the next election because voters have rejected Trump's policies by defeating Trump-aligned candidates in elections across the country.
Because of these failures, Republicans know they have one hope at winning the next election. Change the rules of the game, destroy the rule of law, and desert any last remaining shred of allegiance to the United States Constitution. Redrawing congressional lines to make them better for Republicans, changing the rules of elections, brutalizing American citizens who exercise their rights under the U.S. Constitution. This scheme is not just how Republicans plan to take over our elections. It's how they plan to take over our country.
Democrat Norma Torres of California says the administration is hell-bent on blocking millions of people from voting. People who demonstrate against Republican policies, new young voters, seniors who cannot afford a passport, and women who marry and change their names.
The Republican election bills being considered are a direct attack on dissent of current Republican policies.
She noted Trump's call to federalize elections, and she says we need to ask, what does that actually mean?
Are we talking about military with machine guns at our local school election stations, or masked, untrained, heavily armed ICE agents surrounding our community centers? What are we talking about here? The FBI just raided a local election office with the Director of National Intelligence tagging along like an obedient dog, allegedly in pursuit of a fever dream conspiracy theory about the 2020 elections that no sane person believes.
One way or another, voting in this year's election day may be a lot different. PFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Democratic leaders say a proposal from the White House to reform use of force by federal immigration agents is incomplete and insufficient. They're demanding new restrictions on agents carrying out President Trump's immigration crackdown and threatening a shutdown of the Homeland Security Department over it. Here's Democrat Minority Leader Senator Chuck Schumer.
The initial Republican response is incomplete and insufficient. It fails to address America's concerns about ICE's lawless conduct. We need to see more from the Republicans, and soon. There's no time to waste.
DHS funding ends Friday. Democratic leaders say a White House counterproposal to their list of demands included neither details nor legislative text and does not address the concerns, quote, Americans have about ICE's lawless conduct. Here's Nevada Senator Catherine Cortez Masto.
What we're asking is not radical. We want federal law enforcement to be held to the same reasonable standards as state and local law enforcement. That means ending those roving patrols that are detaining U.S. citizens and law-abiding immigrants based on the way they look. Federal agents shouldn't be violating the Fourth Amendment rights and going into someone's home without a judicial warrant. Accountability, including congressional oversight, no masks, clear badge numbers, body cameras. This is where we need to be.
The White House proposal was not released publicly. Earlier in the day, Republican Senator John Thune of South Dakota said while the GOP has a bottom line, he's still hopeful a deal could be reached.
One thing Republicans are not interested in, obviously, is making it harder, not easier, for dangerous illegal aliens in this country to be detained and deported. We do believe in making it easier, not harder, for law enforcement officials to do their job. So those are things that we are focused on these conversations.
Democratic leaders have released a 10-point plan to reform the use of force by federal agents carrying out the president's deportation agenda, including rules for immigration officers to remove their masks, show identification, better coordinate with local authorities, a stricter use of force policy for federal officers, legal safeguards at detention centers, and a prohibition on tracking protesters with body-worn cameras. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries said today the White House offer walked away from their proposals, and Republicans rejected their demands for an end to racial or ethnic profiling. Were funding to lapse, it could impact more than immigration enforcement activities. The Homeland Security Department's funding bill includes money for FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the Transportation Security Administration. Republicans are warning another shutdown could impact travel, similar to the 43-day government closure last year. The heads of the agencies carrying out the president's mass deportation agenda defended their aggressive enforcement tactics during a heated 3-hour hearing on Capitol Hill today as lawmakers pressed immigration officials over deaths, secrecy, and accountability. Lauren Schmidt reports.
Top officials from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services appeared before lawmakers in a contentious hearing as members scrutinized the administration's intensified immigration enforcement, particularly in Minneapolis, where federal operations have been linked to the shooting deaths of 2 U.S. citizens and the reported brutalization of many others. The House Homeland Security Committee hearing comes at a moment when transparency and accountability are at historic lows, even as funding for those immigration agencies are at record highs. Committee Chair, New York Republican Andrew Gabarino, organized the hearing, citing the need for oversight and transparency.
We must take the temperature down and look at the record of enforcement actions through rational eyes.
Gabarino said his role was not to defend the Trump administration, but to conduct congressional oversight. While he voiced concern about law enforcement safety, he also condemned recent actions and the lack of transparency.
We have now seen the deaths of 2 American citizens in Minnesota. This is all unacceptable and preventable. The safety of law enforcement and the communities they serve and protect must always come first. When officials or elected leaders rush to conclusions about law enforcement or their fellow Americans, public trust suffers. There must be complete and impartial investigation.
Gabarino would be the only Republican to rebuke efforts to rush judgment on Renee Good and Alex Pretty by the Trump administration before completing a full investigation. Meanwhile, the committee's ranking Democrat, Benny Thompson, said the hearing was long overdue.
This hearing is just the start of a reckoning for the Trump administration and its weaponization of DHS against American citizens and the principle our country stands for. Mr. Lyons is here today, nearly a month after we invited him. I guess DHS needed time to get his story straight before he came to testify under oath.
Todd Lyons, the head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, faced the bulk of the highly charged questioning, with Democrats pressing him on accountability and Republicans offering broad support.
We are facing the deadliest operating environment in our agency's history. In fiscal year 2025, death threats against ICE personnel increased more than 8,000%. Assaults on officers have skyrocketed over 1,400%. One officer in Minnesota had his finger bitten off by a protester, egged on by elected officials characterizing our offices as Gestapo or secret police.
In his opening remarks, Lyons said he feared for the safety of his agents, despite data showing that the chance of an ICE or Border Patrol agent being murdered in the line of duty is about 1 in 94,000 per year. And since 2003, only two ICE agents have been murdered in the line of duty, neither during immigration enforcement operations. However, at least eight people have died in encounters with ICE in 2026 alone. Still, the majority of Republicans on the committee focused their questioning on concerns for ICE officer safety, despite data showing that 2025 was the safest year on record for ICE officers. That's according to figures compiled by the Cato Institute. The use of masks by agents, the lack of clear identification, and the use of body cameras were logistical concerns raised during the hearing. Lyons and CBP Commissioner Rodney Scott said thousands of federal officers are already outfitted with body cameras. However, the numbers represent less than half of the total force.
I'm just trying to get the number of ICE agents who have cameras on their body as of today.
Approximately 3,000, sir.
3,000 out of how many?
Out of approximately 13,000, sir, that are in the field.
Meaning roughly 10,000 agents are currently without. Lyons also said body camera footage from the Minneapolis operation would be released publicly. Concerns about vetting were also raised by Rhode Island Democrat Seth Magaziner.
Mr. Lyons, has ICE hired anyone who is charged with a crime related to the January 6th riot here at the Capitol?
Sir, I don't have that information, but I would say no.
Magaziner also questioned CBP Commissioner Rodney Scott on how many agents have faced consequences for alleged abuse of power.
Commissioner Scott, how many of your agents have been disciplined for excessive use of force over the past year?
I cannot comment on ongoing
or I'm not asking you to comment on specific action. Investigation. How many of your agents have been disciplined? I'm just asking for the total.
I'll get that number to you. I don't have it in front of me.
All right. I sent you a letter asking that question and haven't received a response.
California Democrat Eric Swalwell questioned whether any ICE officials had been relieved of their duties.
How many ICE agents have been fired for their conduct under your leadership?
Sir, I can get you that data. I'll get that back to you.
Is it more than one?
I'm not going to speak about personnel actions, but I'll get you that data.
Can you tell us if at least, God, I hope at least one person has been fired for their conduct since these operations have begun? Are you telling us you can't even say one person's been fired?
Sir, I'm not going to talk about personnel actions, but we will get back to you.
But two people have been killed so far. Is that right? A nurse named Pretty and a mom named Good. Two people have been killed so far.
Yes, sir.
When asked whether he would apologize to the family of Renee Good.
For being called a domestic terrorist by the president and his leadership?
No, sir.
Texas Republican Michael McCaul appeared to attribute the escalation and deaths to a former CPB commander.
And then Agent Bovino came into the picture, and I would argue, in fairness, that he escalated the situation by the way that was handled. Your officers are not trained to effectuate crowd control. They are trained to move in surgically, go in and remove these dangerous, violent criminals from the United States of America. I've called for de-escalation after the two deaths, the two shootings that took place. I believe that these roving patrols should be done at the border rather than in the major cities of the United States. So when the president decided to remove Agent Bovino and put in Tom Homan, who I've known for years, a consummate professional, law enforcement professional, I commended the president.
Notably, Homan was investigated by federal law enforcement last year after allegedly accepting a $50,000 bribe from individuals posing as business executives. The hearing unfolded against the backdrop of a looming government shutdown that would disproportionately impact the Department of Homeland Security. Democrats are threatening to block DHS funding unless new restraints are placed on ICE and other agencies carrying out the administration's immigration agenda. While some Democrats press for accountability, Texas Republican Tony Gonzalez focused on proposals to further militarize ICE and CBP, at one point describing Minneapolis as resembling Fallujah, one of the bloodiest battles of the Iraq War.
I've got a bill in particular through bulletproof glass or ballistic windshields. Is that something you think that could help protect the law enforcement officers that are on the front lines?
I think that can help protect the officers on the front lines, but it goes much farther than that because things have changed. So the tactical infrastructure at the border, the bulletproof vests, all of that helps tremendously, but we're fighting a different fight now.
That characterization was reinforced by CBP leadership, who repeated unsubstantiated claims about paid agitators.
But let's not miss the fact that we have coordinated, well-funded, and I think insurgencies or terrorist organizations, however you want to call it, literally trying to prevent legal laws from being enforced in the United States. That is a dramatic change. That's why we've had to shift. So we got to figure out how to protect our officers and agents more holistically.
DHS officials argued that comparisons of ICE to Nazis or other fascists have made their jobs more dangerous, prompting this exchange with Democrat Dan Goldman.
Do you know what other regimes in the 20th century required similar proof of citizenship?
Yes, sir.
What?
Sir, there was various nefarious regimes that did that.
Is Nazi Germany one?
Yes, but I...
Is the Soviet Union
so
one?
I honestly...
Sir, I'm asking right the questions. There, is the Soviet Union one?
Yes, sir, but I totally... This is the wrong type of questioning you
no,
should
No, what's...
Asking.
I'll tell you what the wrong type
but
of
actually,
thing
sir,
is. Sir, it's
the Holocaust
my time.
Museum
reclaiming
is down
my time, sir.
If you want
reclaiming
to go see
my
Nazis,
time, Mr.
It
Chairman.
It's not the men and women of ICE that are out there doing it every day. So to say that the men and women of ICE that
Mr. Chairman,
us,
I'm reclaiming my time. I would like my wrong. Time back, please. You said in your opening statement that references to ICE as the Gestapo or the secret police encourages threats against ICE agents.
100%.
The problem is you have it backwards, sir. People are simply making valid observations about your tactics, which are un-American and outright fascist. So I have a simple suggestion. If you don't want to be called a fascist regime or secret police, then stop acting like one. But people are simply just observing what they are seeing.
Warnings about the threat of fascism were also raised by ranking Democrat Benny Thompson.
Over the past several weeks, the president has made a series of comments regarding the midterm election. The president has urged my Republican colleagues in Congress to nationalize elections. Now, are you involved in any planning on guarding precincts in this country as of today, Mr. Scott?
No, sir.
Mr. Lyons?
No, sir.
So there's no information. You've not been asked to start deploying people for areas anywhere.
No, sir.
Meanwhile, President Donald Trump's former advisor, Steve Bannon, suggested on his podcast that the administration should send ICE agents to polling locations during this year's midterm elections, a possibility the White House refused to rule out. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
While federal officials at today's hearing said ICE is not tracking U.S. citizens, reporting by investigative journalist Ken Klippenstein shows otherwise. Citing two anonymous high-level national security officials, Klippenstein reports FBI and ICE are keeping secret watch lists of Americans it's classified as domestic terrorists, especially protesters, activists, and critics of law enforcement labeled anti-police, pro-Palestinian, and Antifa. It also contains lists of immigrants. There are more than a dozen of these lists with names like Blue Key, Grapevine, Reaper, Sandcastle, Sienna, Slipstream, and Sparta. One, Hummingbird, was created to vet and track Afghans seeking to settle in the United States. Another list, Slipstream, is a classified social media repository. Others are tools used to link people on the streets together, including collecting on friends and families who have nothing to do with any purported law breaking, he reports. Klippenstein references a recent video on social media filmed by a Portland, Maine woman last month recording an immigration agent recording her during the recent ICE surge in the state. Here's their exchange.
It's not illegal to record.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah. Why are you taking my information down?
Because we have a nice little database.
Oh, good.
And now you're considered a domestic terrorist. So
we're videotaping you? Are you crazy?
Klippenstein reports the new lists are in addition to the three existing lists post 9/11, a watch list of 1.1 million people classified as international terrorists, a watch list of more than 10,000 people classified as domestic terrorists maintained by the FBI, and a new watch list of transnational criminals. There were other inaccuracies repeated by federal immigration agents at today's hearing, according to Cade Young, who served as KPFA News Department's fact checker.
The one thing that's notable, they say that there's an 8,000% increase in death threats to federal agents. And then on the DHS website, they post a transcript of a voicemail of what they claim is one of the death threats. And it doesn't seem to follow any of the requirements for what a death threat is for Penal Code 422. There's no specific claims or direct threats within it. It contains harsh language. It's not great language, but it doesn't seem to meet the requirements for a death threat. So the one example they've given to represent this 8,000% doesn't really support their underlying premise.
Okay, what other inaccuracies did you find?
There's definitely a lot of operational inaccuracies that sort of just, they slipped in. You know, they talked about not going into parking lots to pick people up. Well, we know that, you know, The Guardian and Bloomberg have talked about these sweeping campaigns from ICE to go into parking lots, to go into places of work to pick people up. You know, they said directly ICE is not surveying the American people. What we found in fact-checking comes from the American Immigration Council. They found that they're putting in about $40 million just recently in AI facial recognition, on iris scanning, on all the kind of biometric surveillance. So $40 million is a pretty significant amount. Now, they just got like $75 billion from the Big Beautiful Bill. And they're using the surveillance on people that they don't know whether they're U.S. citizens or undocumented. That leads you to believe that some of the time they're using it on U.S. citizens. So that, he specifically said they're not, and the evidence points to the contrary.
Anything else you found that was inaccurate?
Yeah, they throw out this number. The Republicans were saying 10 to 12 million came into the country through illegal means under the Biden administration. The evidence does not suggest that at all. The evidence suggests, in fact, the number is a lot lower, and that those are encounters. So that means Border Patrol interacting with people who are undocumented, whether they've crossed the border or they're at the border. And a lot of those numbers are the same people that Border Patrol is interacting with. So you might have them sending somebody away at the border. That person comes back the next day. That's two encounters, but it's only one person. So the number from 10 to 12 million actually starts to shrink. And then when you factor in the people who are actually in the U.S. illegally, the number gets even smaller. So that number, that 10 to 12 million, is really inaccurate, just a misrepresentation. DHS, they say that they've removed 4 million people who have been encountered, have been returned. But again, encountering doesn't necessarily mean that they are actually like in the country already. It could be just southern border encounters.
Now, they also said of the 10 to 12 million that have entered the U.S., many of them are violent. What did you find?
Yeah, so they said there's been like 400,000 arrests. So out of 400,000 arrests, 14% have been in that violent category. And of course, the sort of violent category also gets mixed with the folks who have felony charges, which for undocumented immigrants is actually easier to get than American citizens. So all of that is getting conflated. Most of the people, the vast majority of the people being arrested, have no criminal history, are not violent. And as far as the protesters go, who are also being, we're being told, are violent against ICE officers and federal agents, we haven't seen a lot of convictions in court. Most of the alleged assaults have resulted in zero injuries to the federal officers, which is why a lot of the cases are being thrown out.
Cade Young is the news department's fact checker of today's congressional hearing on immigration enforcement actions. Bloomington police say they've arrested 30 people in human trafficking sting operation, including one federal employee who was responsible for hiring ICE agents. Here's Bloomington Police Chief Booker Hodges speaking at a press conference today.
Mr. Brashad Johnson, out of Maple Grove. This is the most disturbing arrest that we've had here. He is a backgrounder for ICE, Homeland Security, and federal agencies. So when you're getting your security clearance, this is one of the guys that does your backgrounds, which is kind of scary. So we locked him up. I don't think he's going to be passing a background check no time soon.
Also among the arrested in the human sex trafficking sting, a former clergyman and a transportation worker. Former CNN host Don Lemon has hired former federal prosecutor who resigned in protest of the Trump administration's handling of legal cases in Minnesota, Joe Thompson, for his legal defense. Lemon is one of nine people indicted for alleged role in disrupting a church service in Minnesota in protest of the immigration enforcement action by the administration, the church's pastor, and immigration agent. Lemon says he plans to plead not guilty, saying he was there as an independent journalist. Thompson's been leading major fraud investigations in Minnesota before his resignation. Several prosecutors have now left the office at a time of growing frustration with the administration's immigration enforcement crackdown and the Justice Department's response to fatal shootings of two people in Minneapolis by federal officers. The administration has cited the Minnesota fraud cases as justification for its crackdown in the state on immigrants. Most defendants are from the state's large Somali community. Thompson estimated in December the losses to taxpayers from several fraud cases being prosecuted in Minnesota could total $9 billion. He recently formed his own law firm with Harry Jacobs, another former federal prosecutor who resigned amid the upheaval in the office. The firm's website describes them as battle-tested and seasoned trial lawyers. The National Governors Association is meeting in Washington this month for its annual conference, or so it was supposed to, but one of its traditional events is off the agenda. The bipartisan governors group canceled its annual meeting with President Donald Trump today after he only invited Republicans. 18 Democratic governors had announced they would boycott the traditional dinner after some Democratic governors were excluded. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt, a Republican who chairs the association, announced the decision to skip the meeting with President Trump, saying in a letter, quote, "We cannot allow one divisive action to achieve its goal of dividing us." unquote. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt defended the president's decision, telling reporters it's a dinner at the White House. It's the people's house. It's also the president's home, and he can invite whomever he wants to dinner and events here at the White House. A group of Buddhist monks has crossed a bridge over the Potomac River, completing a 15-week walk for peace today. It began in Texas and ended at the nation's capital. Some 3,500 people packed American University's Bender Arena to hear their message of mindfulness and peace. Christopher Martinez reports.
19 monks from Theravada Buddhist monasteries around the globe made the 2,300-mile Walk for Peace in 108 days, a symbolic number for Buddhists. They were welcomed at Washington National Cathedral, where the group's leader, the Venerable Bhikkhu Panakara, spoke to the crowd of some 3,500 people. He said peace is something we've been seeking for years and still have not found. But he says it's never left us, we just cannot see it.
You have locked it and put them in the box, and you have left it somewhere. You've forgotten it. We are not walking from Fort Worth, Texas to Washington, D.C. to bring you any peace, but to raise the awareness of peace so that you can unlock that box and free it. Let peace bloom and flourish among all of us throughout this nation and the world.
He says the key to unlock that box is the Buddhist practice of mindfulness. But he says mindfulness is not just for Buddhists, it's for everybody.
Now is your job, is your duty to unlock it, find it, unlock it. You're the only one who can do this. Not the venerable monks, not the reverends, nor anybody else but you. Each and every single one of us, we have our own path. And please remember, don't expect our path to be smooth and flat. It always going to be challenge, obstacle, roller coaster road.
Among the local faith leaders and officials present, D.C. Secretary of State Kimberly Bassett welcomed the monks on behalf of the mayor, saying, "Today may mark the end of a 2,300-mile walk, but it's not the end of our journey for peace." Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Thanks, Christopher Martinez, who comes to you and gives you many reports. I cut into the Pacifica Evening News, because it's produced up in KPFA. This is Pacifica Network. You know, we have five stations around the country. We're here in Los Angeles at KPFK. And the reason we cut in is because this is a listener-sponsored radio station. This is the first day of our fund drive. The first day. And the reason we do what we do, we can give you the information we can give you, we can say extra, extra, hear all about it, is because it's not corporate funded. It's people funded. So right now, I'm asking you to call in and subscribe to this station to help out the Pacifica Evening News by calling area code 818-985-5735. Again, area code 818-985-5735. Hit option 2. I believe Terry is still in that room waiting for your call. If you're listening to the news, it's a weekday, every weekday at 6 p.m. Every weekday at 6 p.m. And, you know, we don't get paid here at KPFK. They're producing it up at KPFA, and they send it to us. We live stream it, and they have a lot of great information. Of course, those hearings were this morning. I hope you heard it on your radio station. But it's very important to understand that we can't do this without you. The minimum donation is $25. That will give you make you a subscriber to KPFK. Only $25. That's a year, folks, not a month. A year. So if you haven't subscribed, you just want to become a listener sponsor, only $25. And you can vote for the station board, et cetera, et cetera. So 818-95-5735. Or you can go online, kpfk.org, and there's premiums. or I should say gifts, gifts that we give away for as thank yous. For instance, right now, we have a centennial, Black History Month centennial package, which, oh my God, it has all kinds of stuff in here. Let me see here. So you can call in that same number. Remember the number? 818-985-5735. 818-985-5735. Hit option two. Talk to Terry. And, you know, don't make me feel bad sitting up in here asking you to support what we do. CPB money was taken away. CPB is a corporation for public broadcasting. That money is gone. A lot of stations went under. A lot of public non-commercial radio stations went under. They had already taken our CPB funding, so it didn't affect us. But what will affect us is if you do not call and support us. So this full Black History Month Centennial Collection, you can get as a 8-gigabyte Centennial USB. It has a lot of stuff in it, my goodness. Black Panther Party. You know, right now is the time we really have to keep up with our history. Our history, not his story. Because they're trying to negate it. They're trying to change it around. There's so much history. When I talk to people, they have no clue what the Black Panthers did. They have no clue why there's gun legislation in California. They don't know who the Weather Underground were. People don't know because they refuse to teach that in your history classes, in your public so-called education system. But here we teach it on KPFK. The Pacific Evening News gives you information that you will not find anywhere else. And so I'm asking you, ladies and gentlemen, to take advantage of this centennial package. It's Black Mental Health with Joy DeGruy. Oh my goodness, Joy DeGruy wrote the book Post Traumatic Slave Syndrome. I've had her on my shows a few times. Blues, we go to music, Black BLM, Black Liberation, Coltrane Legacy, Fire Next Time, James Baldwin, and of course the Malcolm X. 818-985. Call in and tell them what you need to do to get some of these premiums and put them in your archives. Give them to your children. Because a lot of the children don't know. If you go out on the street and ask kids, who the Weather Underground is? They don't know. Do you know who the Black Panthers are? Oh, that was that movie, right? They don't know. How about the Black Liberation Army who freed Assata Shakur? They don't know. They don't know. Matter of fact, they're trying to erase the history. So 818, I don't have much time. I would like, to get raised. Our goal per hour is $1,000. 818-985-5735. If you listen to the evening news and you already subscribe, go ahead and throw in, if you can afford, an extra $50, $25, $75, $100. Call in at 818-985-5735. Hit option two if you can afford it. If you're not a subscriber, become a subscriber. You'll feel good about yourself. 818-985-5735. This is our very first day of the winter fun drive. Oh, my God, I remember these fun drives from way back when we had a gentleman by the name of Mario Cassetta. And we had a winter fun. It was like a festival in Santa Monica. Oh, it was packed. It was just amazing. We're not doing that now because times have changed so much, ladies and gentlemen. But we are still here. We are still broadcasting at 90.7 FM. We added kpfk.org, listen live, and we've added kpfk.org/archives. So you can go to the archives and hear shows that you miss. You can go, you can just do whatever you want to do. But the question is, do it. You have to do it. because this is how we survive. And in these times, you know, we need to survive because there's so much disinformation, misinformation going on. It's pathetic. Did I say pathetic? I did. It's pathetic. Anyway, my time is up. I hope I get several callers at 818-985-5735, hit option 2. If not, go to kpfk.org. You can pledge online. There's different premiums, one I've been talking about, and even more. Join us. Become a listener sponsor of KPFK.